golfj.com.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our special Open Championship recap episode of the Golf J podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett DeConi and Doug Brown here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls, New York on Monday, July 18th, 2016. And it was, to me, the major of the year, a battle for the ages, unbelievable golf played by two elder statesman on the PGA Tour, right?
40-somethings.
And
joined all of us.
Right.
And it just did, to see two guys play that good on, with that much on the line, it was really what Major Championship Golf's all about. And congratulations to Henrik Stenson. He's now a major champion winner. And old Phil makes it to 11 now. 11 second-place finishes in majors.
Right. I heard that this morning. I didn't realize it was that high. Oh. And Nicklaus had 18 or 19, something like 19, yeah. I think.
And a lot more wins.
Right, yeah. 18 wins, 19 seconds. So Phil's got 11 seconds, which is, well, good news and bad news.
Yeah, it's as good as he played, you know, and being 46, it's yeah. no, by no means over the hill. But, you know, in golf, there's a lot of these younger guys. And to be able to play like he did, he's still, and come away probably still disappointed, you know, which kind of stinks for him. But
I'm sure there's no moral victories at that level.
No.
I'm sure he's disappointed, but the takeaway is obviously a great golf match. If you didn't enjoy that, it's a head-to-head battle.
Yeah.
With good golf, quality golf. You know, Henrik Stenson ties the all-time low 18-hole round in majors in the final round and wins by three. Tremendous.
Yeah, the only other person to shoot 63 in the final round, Johnny Miller.
Right.
He was there to watch it.
So right, broadcasting.
It was the 29th 63 major championship. Phil started out the week with one on the first right. round. But we're going to talk a lot about this thing tonight. There was a lot to talk about. The green speed, the weather, how the weather may have played a factor. And really, you know, right now we're going to have the Canadian Open next week. We're going to give you our picks. Then the PGA Championship. So I mean, it's right in the heart of the summer, and we knew this was coming when right. the PGA changed their schedule due to the Olympics. Right. So, you know, we're certainly going to be busy. But, Brian, you remember the Watson-Nicklaus duel yes. in the sun at Turnberry?
Yes.
Which was better? Was it the duel in the sun 2 at Troon, or was it Nicklaus-Watson?
I think I'd have to say Nicklaus and Watson were better only because of the more marquee names. Nothing against Stenson and Mickelson, because they're certainly quality players. But when you talk about anything involving Jack Nicklaus,
yeah.
who's arguably the best ever, and Tom Watson's not much below that. Tom's got to be in the top 10 best ever.
And Mickelson brought it, the marquee value.
Yes.
Yeah. Stenson, certainly, I think, deserving of all the accolades of being the Open champ. But, yeah, right. if it was Rory McIlroy or, you know, one
Jordan
of the
Spieth,
big
Jason
three,
Day.
Right?
So it was yeah. just slightly below. I don't want to take much away from yesterday right. compared, but when you throw Jack Nicklaus into the ring, I got to lean towards that. And that ending was even more dramatic when Jack made that about a 40-footer on 18, I guess, to shoot the 60. I think he shot 66. Or did they both shoot 65 the final day?
No, it was Nicklaus 66, Watson 65.
And Tom had already got a second shot in about, say, 3 feet. But now that 3-footer became
to win
the tournament, not a 2-footer to lag it and
right.
all that. So I have to go towards the Nicklaus Watson as being better, but only by a little bit.
Now, Jack said, though, today, he said that this one yesterday was better than his in far as golf
That's
goes.
That's Jack's style, though.
But that, yeah, I mean, yeah. he deferred, but he did say that. He said that the golf he thought was better yesterday based on their scores than his with Tom. But you're talking about a 5-time British Open champ
right.
and then the guy that has all the majors, the most majors. So, definitely hard to beat. Tiger and Phil maybe together
yeah.
in the final doing that would maybe
yeah.
Would compare, but yeah, that's tough to beat those two, and that's exactly what type you'd want.
Yeah,
and there
the one thing they do have in common was all four guys played incredible golf in
yeah.
the biggest
yes.
of stages, but not the toughest of conditions. And one of the things that they've been talking about is the fact that Stenson and Mickelson both got the luck of the weather. Because they avoided the late Friday times, which devastated everybody who played it during on those conditions. And even on Sunday, you know, it, towards the end of the day, the skies kind of, the winds kind of died down, and it became almost pleasant by their standards. Right. And, you know, to that I say there's a lot of other golfers that also had favorable weather draws. They were nowhere near Mickelson, who finished 11 shots ahead of third place. Right. I mean, these guys just took off, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they got paired together in the final grouping on Saturday. Right. And from that point on, they just played off each other.
Yeah. It's tough after four rounds to complain about the weather. Half the field had the same conditions.
Right.
Only two guys led by a bunch, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So I understand that you could get the luck of the draw or the bad side of the draw, but there was 156 players. So there's an awful lot of them had the exact same conditions.
Same opportunity to go that low.
Well, that's right. And, you know, that happens. We've seen it at the Masters, too. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's always beautiful in the morning at the Masters in Augusta, and you get the guys in the afternoon. Sometimes they get hit on Thursday or Friday with rain. So, you know, that's going to be at any tournament, and you're going to see that. So you can't really blame that. Those two guys just played phenomenal golf. I think that's what it comes down to.
But that's why those tee times are flipped that way, so that everybody does get a taste of the same typical weather.
And sometimes the forecast just doesn't play out perfectly. Right. You know, you're going to you might catch a favorable draw like a lot of golfers besides Stenson and Mickelson did. But also, you know, golf's an outdoor sport. There's always going to be some element of the unknown, and it's never going to be perfectly fair because it's not a controlled environment. And all golfers accept that, and it's true at any level of the game, whether it's your local club championship. If you get the first tee time of the day and you only have to play two or three holes in pouring rain, where the last tee time of the day has to play 12 or 13.
Right.
So it's just part of the game.
On Friday, Mickelson shot 69 or 70, right? 69.
Yeah. Terrible conditions.
Stenson's the one that played well Friday. He's at 65, if I remember right.
Yep.
Okay. So, that means but these guys beat everybody else by 15 shots, which means those guys shot 80 during that same stretch of weather, which they didn't do. Those guys like Bill Haas and those guys, they shot probably 72, 73. They didn't shoot 80.
Right.
No. So, I think the golf course is there to take on a consistent basis. The weather wasn't as severe as they even predicted.
Right.
I think it was better than they expected.
Yeah, it did. I think it was, was it Thursday afternoon or Friday afternoon was the worst of it, but
yeah,
it was really only one day that had terrible, terrible weather. It wasn't like they were talking initially for like Thursday was going to be okay and the rest of the weekend was going to be done.
Supposed to be rain and 30 mile an hour winds and all that, so.
So, but, you know, those guys putted really well. And
well, they did putt well.
They had the greens figured out, and they were slow, but they had them.
Yeah.
They had them figured out. They had the pace, and those guys just went back and forth, and it was a two-man race from
definitely saw that yesterday, the ability to make putts, and then a couple of them were bombs. You know, Stenson made, what, a 50-footer or whatever.
When you least expected it, it was on the last par five. Mickelson was putting for eagle. Stenson was in the high grass by the green, and he knocked it. Hit a great shot, but left himself 25, 30 feet. Was it that close?
On 16?
It was the last par five where it looked like Mickelson had an eagle putt and Stenson was off the green and two in the high grass, and it looked like it could be a two-shot swing.
Right.
And Stenson makes birdie, and Mickelson just barely misses. He had two putts that really were cruel to watch. Yeah. The putt for 62 on 18 on Thursday, which was ridiculous. It was like if you 3 inches from the hole, you would bet your life savings that was going in.
Right.
And then the same thing, really, on the eagle putt. It was going a little slower, but it really took a hard left-hand turn at the hole. So
it could have changed things.
There's two more shots. And it Stenson never had that pressure of the closing holes, with Mickelson being within a shot or two, even, you know, a three-shot lead on the 18th green. You know, he knew he won, and he got to take that walk. And and great for Henrik Stenson. He was certainly a candidate for the best player to never win a major.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that a few weeks ago after the U.S. Open, and I think I had mentioned Sergio, and I didn't really even think about Stenson, but, I mean, probably better.
He flies under the radar.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a mean look to him when they zoom in on his face after he hits a golf ball. He's got a real mean look to him. Apparently he's quite a nice guy.
He's a prankster is a word on him.
But he's kind of quiet.
Yeah.
He's not flamboyant.
Well-liked.
So you forget about him a little bit.
Yeah, he's very, very under the radar.
You know, Sergio gets the microphone in front of him and he badmouths everybody, so remember Sergio.
Yeah.
So when you get asked that question, his name pops in your head, not a Henrik Stenson.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, the guy's won the FedEx Cup.
Yeah.
Tour championship.
Players champ.
Players champ. I mean.
Yep.
Match play champ back in match February. Play.
So, I mean, he's won huge tournaments.
Right.
All over the world, too. I mean, in European PGA Tour, he's, I don't know if he, has he won the Race to Dubai? I know he's been in contention for that, too, for a few times. Right. So, you know, he's won tournaments everywhere.
He's been around for a long time, 40 years old. Back in 2001, I want to say, he had dropped to over 600 in the world rankings. Fought back, and then in 2011, I believe, dropped down to like 254.
Right.
And, you know, kind of rebuilt his game and came back. And now with the win, he goes from 51 to 14 in the FedEx standings, which is a big difference the way they do cuts after each of those events. And then from 6 to 5 in the world rankings. So now this guy's the fifth.
Right.
Best player in the world behind Johnson, McIlroy, Spieth, and Day. So it's great for Swedish golf. It's fun. It was fun to hear from Annika Sorenstam.
Right.
Yeah. It was fun to see Jesper Parnevik.
Yeah.
David Lingmerth also Swede, and those two will compete in Rio.
Right.
Where Stenson says he's not afraid of mosquitoes.
Right.
He said he's afraid of bigger things than that, but he's not going to let mosquitoes bother him, which is kind of funny.
Think about it again. A month ago at the U.S. Open, he misses the cut
by
quite a bit. He had a decent first round and a horrible second round. I think he was like 10 over and didn't go back for the last hole, which was Saturday morning, because he had to play one hole. He would have missed the cut anyhow.
Right.
And then flew across the ocean and won some event in Europe the very next week and now wins this one 2 weeks later than that.
And with the PGA Championship just 2 weeks away, there's a real good chance he's a favorite, along with Dustin Johnson, I would think, would still be a favorite. And I think Mickelson's odds skyrocket.
Give them both props. They got to be up there in the top five picks.
I mean, it's great, great group of guys to do what they did. Spieth had a great round yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Rory, I mean, for his struggles, still had a top five.
Yep.
And he's won a tournament, two fourths and a fifth, I think, in his last five tournaments. So he had one missed cut in there, but you know, all these guys are raring to go, and it's going to be great to watch in 2 weeks.
You're right. You talk about their rounds, but they got beat by 15 to 20 shots.
Yeah.
And that's typically on a regular event, you're finishing top 50, top 60, whatever, if you can beat by 20.
Yeah.
These guys were getting top 10s, right? There's such a gap.
Yeah.
DJ was top 10 too, right?
I think he snuck back in there.
Ninth or something like that. Day finished, what, 22nd?
Day was out of there. McIlroy and Johnson stayed in. Day,
right,
nowhere near there. I think he finished at one or two over. But,
you know, they didn't cover it much, but that was kind of two tournaments in one. You had those two guys competing for first and second place.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else competing for third. They didn't cover any of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They showed a little bit of Beef Johnson.
Yeah. Well, he was getting some notoriety.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was a great tournament underneath those guys.
Yeah.
We just didn't really get to see it.
Colin Montgomery made the cut. I think I didn't start watching the telecast in time to see him finish. I was looking forward to see him come up 18 on Sunday. But not much fanfare surrounding anything other than the battle between Mickelson and Stenson. And, you know, I got to thinking about Mickelson's 11 runner-up finishes. And the first thing you'd kind of think is, well, you know, that was during the Tiger era, so Tiger's responsible for a lot of that. But only one of those 11 was to Tiger.
Right.
Only one of those second-place finishes had Tiger winning, which I thought was pretty amazing. Because I would have assumed it was 5 or 6. But just one, and that was probably the only time that Mickelson and Tiger ever went head-to-head. And I can remember wanting to see those guys square off in the way that he and Stenson did. Today, but it just never happened, except for once.
Which one was it? U.S. Open?
Geez, you know, I don't have that here. The golf,
I'm trying to think of which one, but
GolfDigest.com had a little piece where they ran through all 11 of them.
Right.
And there was a lot of them, just one was Tiger. So one person who won no matter what happened on Sunday was Callaway. Both these guys are strong Callaway players.
Right.
Stenson played a Titleist golf ball. Mickelson played a Callaway, but both guys, Callaway guys. In Stenson's bag, he plays the Callaway XR16 9-degree driver. But I don't even know if we ever even saw that because he was hitting that three wood, which is a Callaway Diablo Octane Tour 13 degree driver that he was pumping out there with Mickelson's drives regularly. Callaway Legacy Black irons two through pitching wedge. You don't see that too often anymore. He carries a 2, 3, 4. One of the best, maybe probably the best long iron player in the game, Henrik Stenson. A couple of Callaway wedges, MD3 milled 52 and 58 degrees, so he doesn't even carry a 60 degree. And Odyssey White Hot XG putter. And, yeah, Callaway Golf had to love it. Because Mickelson, well-known Callaway guy.
They were partying in Carlsbad.
Free TV coverage.
No doubt.
Yep. And speaking of Mickelson, he changed his putting grip up.
Yeah.
A little bit there on Troon Slow back Greens nine. On Sunday. Yeah, he went from the back to the claw to the regular. And when they asked him about it, he said it just felt a lot better. And, you know, if you really trust yourself, you go with what feels best.
I hear that.
Even if it's the final round of the British Open.
Yes, yep. And he was doing that more for distance control, or was he?
Like just felt better, I guess. You know, that's what he said. He didn't really elaborate more than say it just felt better on the longer putts. So right. I imagine distance did have something to do with it.
Sure.
Yeah, you got, you know, most of putting is feel. So if he felt good and mentally he feels good, but I would bet it was the long putts as well that he could get a little more power to it.
You got to figure, though, although he didn't do it the other three rounds, you got to figure he practices that a lot
when
he's out in, you know, on the range or on the putting green, I mean, and just it's not something that's a fluky thing that he did. You know, he's done some other crazy stuff in the days, but you got to figure changing your putter grip
at age 46, he might just be like, whatever, you know, I'll change it if it feels better. He may not have practiced it, you know. I mean, I'm sure he's practiced both ways over the past few years, but I don't think that he said to himself, you know, I better work on this different grip just in case. I think that he got out there and he felt a little comfortable. He had confidence in himself at 46 years old, right? Which brings me to a question. Phil Mickelson just put on one of the greatest golfing displays of anybody this year at age 46. When he's 50, do we need to assume that he's going to be off to the senior tour? Or do you think he will try to retain his tour status, which he probably will easily be able to do and continue to play into his 50s on the PGA Tour?
I think you'll see him continue to play until he becomes what he feels non-competitive, which I don't see that in him to say that. If he ever goes to the senior tour, I'm going to think he's going to be more of a marquee bit player. I'll show up for the two or three.
No, the U.S. things. Seniors Open. He could play in the Senior Open and the U.S. Open.
He could cross over.
And same thing with the British Open.
But I think he'll do more of, you know, Vijay played both for a while, and it seems to be more migrating towards the seniors now. I don't think you're going to see Phil get on it. At 50 years old, he's going to stay on a regular tour.
Vijay's really one of the only guys I think that's ever done it. And he's playing in the Canadian Open again this year or next week.
Yeah, he's been playing PGA a lot more last few, you know, month or so. Right.
I think early in the year he's played a lot of seniors.
Yeah.
Well, Ray Floyd won one on both tours one year, going way back. But
it seems to me 50's getting to be a little young to be considered senior in the world of golf.
Right.
These guys, Mickelson,
guys are showing it.
Yeah.
The equipment they have to get the ball out there,
right?
You know, and the course is the way they're set up. I think he'll if he's healthy. You know, he has battled some issues with arthritis and things like that, but and joints. But if he's healthy, he's 53, 54. That's another 8 years. You know.
Yeah, I think he'll still be around until he can't be.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if he'd even play in the senior tour.
Well. This week wasn't a fluke either. I mean, he's been playing great. He hasn't.
He's just
statistically as good as anybody in the tour.
He's top five in most statistics, and he's had a really good year.
It's
you don't really look at it as a great year for Phil Mickelson because of what he's done in the past. But you know, any other pro on tour right now would take everything he's done this year and be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, no doubt. Agree.
He's having a great year. Good fantasy guy this year.
Yeah, a couple under-the-radar things that we might not have noticed, but Steve Stricker came in fourth, which there's another guy, and they showed this week that the Open champion has an average age of 38, which is much higher than any of the other majors. So that it's not just a fluke. It's experience matters at the Open, which starts to make me think that, geez, this might be the best test of golf, right. You know, of all the majors. This might be the best.
Right. Well, what did they say? That this is the truest test, and the Open, the U.S. Open is the toughest test? Something like, I've heard that somewhere before.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
You know, it's...
But it does show the experience, the maybe it's maturity, patience.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard to think that a 21-year-old kid has got patience necessarily because he hasn't been through the ringer. Here's Phil Mickelson, has been through everything that you could imagine.
Now this.
So he makes a bogey.
Yeah.
Like he says, who cares, right?
Right.
But it shows because it's quite a significant difference in average age.
Well, a couple other things here. First of all, J.B. Holmes... flying under the radar a bit. He'll be on the Ryder Cup team, but the second top five in a major this season, finished fourth at the Masters, so he was six under par. He was third place, 70-70, 69-69, so keep your eye on J.B. Holmes 2 weeks from now at the PGA Championship. And too many cameras out there in the Open. My God, they were bothering Mickelson on the 17th hole of the Saturday's round, where he chewed somebody out. Well, didn't really chew him out. Phil doesn't usually chew people out, but
he called him out, though.
He called him out.
Bones was pretty active with all that, too.
Yeah. It's crazy, though, especially that final match. It's because it's truly an international event, even unlike the U.S. Open is. And all the different media shows up, and they all have different cameras. It seems to me that they would have some sort of the Open itself should just hire, you know, a half a dozen cameramen and sell the stuff to everybody else. I don't know.
It seemed like the same thing. It boiled down to two players, so the entire focus on those two guys.
Right.
So did more cameras go than normal?
Yep.
Because there was no reason to take pictures for third place.
Right.
Okay, so you got to wonder if they all just, like it was a playoff, boom, and they all go.
Even during Saturday, it felt that way. It was just a two-man race. Nobody really was able to step up.
Nobody made a run.
You thought it might be Rory for a moment, but then he snapped his three-wood.
Yeah.
That wasn't a good sign. So so in the past week, Rory has badmouthed the Olympics, smashed his three-wood into pieces in front of a national or worldwide audience.
Claimed he doesn't care about growing the game.
Yep, says it's not his job to grow the game. He wants to win majors. So tough week for Rory, but he did play well overall.
Still top five. Yeah.
So he said what he felt about the Olympics. He probably was could have done something a little more politically correct the way it, with some better wording, but he's not going to play, and he thinks there's better sports in the Olympics than golf to watch.
He's going to only watch the stuff that matters.
Yeah, stuff that matters.
So he's not watching
golf. Probably could have said that a little differently.
He's not watching golf or the basketball.
So I don't know if these guys, if they weren't playing in this week's PGA Tour event, would they watch it when they're home? I bet they don't. They got hobbies.
Enough golf.
They go out on the boat or they go with the kids or whatever. So they probably don't watch golf anyways. So to say you're going to watch the Olympics, other than being it's the first Olympiad in 112 years or something like that that it's being held, so maybe it's got a little more of a draw for a non-participant professional golfer to watch.
All right.
But to come out and say what he said, as harshly as he said it, Billy tells me he has no interest in playing the Olympics at all, even 4 years from now. Even though I think he came out and said he'd play in Tokyo.
Right.
I don't sense that he will.
Yes.
And I'm concerned about how long golf is going to last in the Olympics.
Yeah, maybe it's got a two-year trial, so that might be it.
Yeah.
Because
he's not the only one that feels that way.
No, obviously not.
We've grown up with track and field and swimming and diving and, you know, the gymnastics, and somebody wins by a hundredth of a second and all that, and now we're going to throw this golf into it. So I don't know what it's going to have.
Yeah, I mean, most of the focal point in the Summer Olympics is the track and field.
Yeah.
We all tune in for that. The gymnastics is huge. But, you know, if you're a golf fan, not the players, but if you're a golf fan, even though the field is diluted, I'm excited to watch it. You know, just to see what happens, because there's still some great players. Like we said, Stenson's going. I mean, it's going to be a good competition. We can go back and forth.
Even
on the
as
format.
A viewer, you're watching track and field or gymnastics, and you're watching those players compete in their Super Bowl, and it only comes once every 4 years, and that's part of the draw. Nobody's watching because they really enjoy the sport of gymnastics or track and field. They're watching for the human stories.
Yeah.
And so when we're watching golf, with the exception of maybe on the women's side, but this isn't even the fifth top event that they'd want to win. Right.
But those other sports have world championships every year.
Yeah,
they do, but the Olympics is like number one.
Right.
Totally agree.
But, you know, okay, so if all these guys did play in it, I know it's still not a major, it's not the players, it's not even like the match play, but maybe it's bigger than that. If they were all committed and they all went, the top guys, I think it would be a lot more reason to want to watch it.
Oh, I would be a million times more likely to want to watch that if it was the top 40 players in the world were all there.
So, though, my point is that it is a good event, and it would be a good event if the best players were going, which in my mind they should be going, but that's just my opinion. I don't think they did any service to the game of golf, and now they say, oh, well, we'll play in Tokyo in 4 years, and I look forward, Jordan Spieth said, I look forward to playing in four or five of these. Well, right. There might not be four or five to play in because you guys didn't play in this one, and this was the first one, so it's... It's hard to kind of get behind these guys and their reasonings when they could be killing this competition after two tries for what Henrik Stenson says, mosquitoes that,
I'm going to wait and see what it looks like. I'm going to, I have no idea what it's going to look like. So, I know that I will not be looking forward to it, even if it was a full field, as much as the Masters, the U.S. Open, or the British Open.
But I don't think they're trying to I don't think they're trying to be those. They're just trying to have another exciting Olympic event. It's only every 4 years. I don't think they're trying to compete with those events at all. But it definitely would be much better. And
the LPGA, though, this might be their Super Bowl. It might become their Super Bowl because there'll be more eyes on them than at the U.S. Women's Open.
It's like you said, the human story could be there for the women's side.
Right.
Because there's some ladies in there that are competing that, are really, really excited about this. And so that we could get our human story from the women's side. Who knows? After Tokyo, maybe the women's side continues on and the men's side goes away. I don't know.
Well, and then there's a gorse.
You don't want to get stuck in that.
No, it looks like the nastiest stuff that grows out of the earth that you could have on a golf course. Doesn't seem suited to a golf course, honestly. Why you would grow it on the golf course, I don't know, but it is nasty. Mickelson hit a great shot from the gorse, and then Thomas Peters, I think I got the guy's name right, on Sunday, had a little trouble in the gorse and snapped his club over his knee and threw it into the gorse. Well, it's funny to hear the announcer say, uh-oh, that one's headed for the gorse.
How about, was it hole 11 they had to carry it? 250 yards or
over
so.
Over a whole field of gorse.
It's like a big water hazard, but it's just gorse.
That's a great hole. I would vote hole 11 at Troon maybe is a top 18 holes worldwide. If you're going to put it together, a dream 18.
Right.
That's a pretty cool hole, and there's a lot of risk and reward. And the with the train and the gorse, the blind shot, the slanted fairway in the greenside area. I thought it was a pretty cool hole. I liked that a lot. And the postage stamp was also fun to see. Yeah. Played at 100 yards on Sunday, and only 46% of the field hit the green in regulation. At 100 yards, the best players in the world.
They got to be so much in their head about what they're thinking about when they go up to that tee box.
So much can go wrong.
Yeah.
It's a neat hole in the sense that you talk about 100 yards.
Yeah.
And we're struggling.
Yeah.
Somebody made seven. I think Kuchar made seven.
You get in that bunker on the right-hand side and forget about it. I mean, you're going backwards, sideways. Yeah. You're hitting it.
You wouldn't think any professional golfer would miss the green from 100 yards.
Why aren't, and I'm getting a little off topic here, but why aren't there more pot bunkers on American courses? Like, it's a cool design. It's a cool feature. I don't necessarily know it needs to be a links-style course to have a few pot bunkers out there. But you don't see them anywhere, right?
I think you'll find one at Harbortown.
Oh, yeah?
I think there's a par 3 that's got a ladder that takes you down into it.
Oh, yeah, I can.
That's the only one that comes to my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and at Harbortown, I think there's a real short par 4, too, that has, it's almost like an island, but it's got all waste around it.
Yeah. And it might be the same hole that I'm talking about.
It could be that one.
I thought it was a 3 par, but it might be a 4.
Well, I think you're right, though. I think there's one on both of them.
But it's amazing. That's all that comes to my head. And
yeah. Unless it's a link-style American course.
Right.
Yeah, because like even at Chambers Bay, they're not pot bunkers.
Brian, that's a Lynx style course.
And at Bandon Dunes, I'd love to play there someday, but from what you read about, they're blowouts. They're not pot bunkers. They're not anything just kind of sitting in the fairway like that.
A lot of them talk now that the bunkers in the American design are not hazards. In reality, those guys are so good getting out of the sand.
Oh, yeah.
Those are hazards at Troon.
Sure. Yeah, you want to stay out at all costs because you might be in the middle and have a fairly easy shot out, but you also might not be able to play anywhere near the green.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, too, with those, some of them you're in there and it's so tight in there, you can't get your full swing. You got to come up a lot, you know, take a much steeper swing at it. So that all plays into it.
Certainly adds to the stress, that's for sure.
Right.
No doubt.
So the USJ's had a terrible summer between what happened at the US Open, but more widely debated was what happened to Dustin Johnson at the U.S. Open this year. And heading into the U.S. Open, they kept talking about course setup and Mike Davis was going to do this and the greens were going to be so fast. And it really backfired on them. And the RNA, Royal and Ancient, who governs the Open, kind of set it up as without much fanfare, and then made the decision on Saturday not to mow the greens at all or roll them. So the third round of a major championship, they didn't mow the greens that morning. And can you just imagine? I get upset when they don't, when I play the course at home here at Seneca Falls and they didn't mow the greens.
Right.
And think about the pros on the normal weekly tour stops. Everything's got to be perfect for those guys.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if they didn't mow the greens at, you know, the Heritage.
Right.
You know, at Arbortown for one day for whatever reason. It would be crazy. But for some reason, it kind of worked at Troon. And
nobody complains.
No, they were slow. And, you know, it was an interesting thing. Who said this? Okay, it was, I think it was someone with the RNA said that, you know, if you got them snipping at 9.5 or 10, that's a big difference, he said. Once you get kind of over 10, you stop having to really hit it. You just get it started. But anything under there, you got to say to yourself, don't forget to hit it.
Right.
And really, when you're stroking a putt, there's more that can go wrong the longer you have to take your stroke.
Right.
So while the fast greens, they're typical of most PGA Tour stops, are scary, I guess, to some extent. The actual putting motion, there's less that can go wrong because you just are, you're reading it and getting it started. Whereas these guys were really stroking it. Stenson and Mickelson and everybody that played Saturday and Sunday, they were slow Sunday too. It was just different. It looked almost municipal.
Yeah.
But it didn't take away from the event at all.
Well, you know, that's one of the things you look at. You hear all the stuff always about the U.S. Open setup and the greens and the rough and everything, and you never hear, you hardly ever hear anybody complaining. You never really hear anybody talk about how the course is set up at the Open Championship. It's just never really a topic of consideration. I don't know if they've got everybody scared into thinking something or saying something over there, but you just don't ever hear about it that way. It's just, here's the course. This is what it's going to be this week. You're going to go play it, and right. Whoever wins, wins.
Well, I've heard the RNAC before. They're not concerned about what the people shoot.
Right.
They want to be a fair test.
Right. Right.
And a fair preparation. So they take into account, let's face it, the wind blows 30, 40 miles an hour and there's nothing to block it. They got to be a little cautious. I don't think those greens
St. Andrews last year had an issue where the greens were too fast and the wind blew and they had to suspend play for the whole day.
Right.
Yeah.
They'd rather have them out there in 40-mile-per-hour winds if they can.
Keep playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So they don't want the embarrassment of what happened like last year. Although, of course, you can't control it. If the wind was 60,
right,
you can't control it. You can only listen to the predictions. But I don't think – they obviously don't care or they don't mind if somebody shoots low.
No.
Another side factor, too, to consider with slower greens is that the twosomes at the Open were averaging about 3 hours and 30 minutes to get around, which is pretty short. And one of the reasons is they didn't have to mark every two-footer and read it both ways. They just went up and tapped it in because the greens were – more manageable, and you don't see a lot of people missing the two-footers on the fast greens anyway. So, look, I like fast greens. I don't think they need to be extreme. I think even Augusta might have to check themselves over time. They're especially, I think they do it to protect their reputation as a major championship venue. But what this week showed me is that, you know, you can set the course up a lot of different ways, and you don't always have to be pushing the envelope with green speeds. So,
very true.
So, anyways, we went into this year, you know, wondering how many majors Jason Day was going to win, or if Spieth was going to defend at the Masters or the U.S. Open, or if Rory McIlroy was going to be back, and, you know, who was going to emerge out of the big three.
Ricky Fowler was talked about.
But the big three is no, yeah, Ricky Fowler is what we, in the earlier year, were like, is it a big four?
Yeah.
You know, no. But the whole, the big three is now morphed back down into the rest of the world, or they've risen up, or whatever it is. They met in the middle, and I think it's time to stop talking about the big three or the big four, because now you got Dustin Johnson wedged himself at number two in the world, and now Henrik Stenson's up to five. You know, heading into the next major, how many, who would you take, Phil Mickelson or Jordan Spieth? You know, it wasn't even a discussion a few months ago, but now it would. You might find some people who would take that bet. You take Spieth and they take Mickelson, or you take Day and they take Mickelson or right. Stenson, and that's not to mention, you know, two dozen other players who are just on the cusp. So, right. Is that good for golf?
I think it is. I don't think you need to have a big three.
I think it's good for golf. You don't need to have a big 20. I think it could water down a little bit, but there's certainly, I guess, six or eight guys now we could talk about. You know, interesting question would be, who would you vote for player of the year right now?
Yeah.
And if I asked you that a year ago, you'd have said Jordan Spieth hands down. Even though Jason Day got hot at this point on. But right today, you would have said Jordan Spieth. Today, yeah. I don't think you guys would answer me.
No.
We'd have to ponder the question, right?
Before
there's no clear-cut player of the year.
It's not Danny Willett.
No.
And it's probably not Henrik Stenson, so you lean towards maybe Dustin Johnson. Who won the WGC event, but, yeah. You know.
Jason Day's had a good year.
Yeah, it's...
Henrik Stenson won a major.
It's almost like either right to this point, because the last four majors have been first-time winners, going back to... the British last year was Zach Johnson, but since then it's been four first-time major winners. So it's almost like you have to either go all in about the majors and pick one, or who's had the better year minus the majors, you know?
Right.
Like Jason Day's won a couple big tournaments, even Adam Scott earlier. But, you know, Stenson's played well, McIlroy's played well, so it's hard to tell right now. You can't pick one right now. I don't know if you can.
I wouldn't be able to answer my own question.
Yeah, it's all opinion right now.
Well, the former big three, it's playing pretty good, actually. It's in terms of everybody that wasn't named Stenson or Mickelson this week. McIlroy finished fifth, tied for fifth, four under par, rounds of 69, 71, 73, 67, tied with Tyrell Hatton and Sergio. McIlroy started the week at number 36 in the FedEx Cup standings with five top 10 finishes and 12 starts. So, you know, he's still one of the best players in the world. Jordan Spieth shot 68 on Sunday to finish 30th at two over par. But Spieth has said that despite the 30th place finish, he feels like he's close to, you know, competing at the highest level. And it was also Sunday 68 was Spieth's first under par round in a major since the first round of the Masters. So
that's hard to believe.
So he really has fallen off. But he says he's coming back, and Dustin Johnson, he did finish tied ninth at two under par. So, hey, three, you know, these guys are still right there. Jason Day tied for 22nd at plus one, and if you asked anybody, you'd say, oh, Day played terrible. Well, he finished 22nd out of the field of the best golfers in the world. So golf's a crazy game, you know, it can change just like that, and you know, last year when Zach Johnson won the Open and Day missed out on being in part of that playoff, it was 3 or 4 weeks later, he won the PGA for his first major. And you would have guaranteed at that point he would have won one of these three majors, but he didn't. So it's pretty much wide open. So we're already almost 40 minutes deep in this episode, and the trivia question for the week is way overdue. Need you to tweet your answer to @TheGolfJ. First one to tweet us will win a Golf J hat. So, a showdown for a major championship by two golfers older than 40 has happened just once in a final group on Sunday in the history of the modern game, let's say. So, can you name the two golfers and the event that last squared off in the final round of a major 40-plus years or older? And we'll have your answer at the end of the show. Time to shift gears real quickly here for the Golf J Golf Tip of the Week. And this week, Rhett's on tap, he's got the tip.
You know, Jim tasked us, Doug, with the last couple of weeks of bringing a good tip. You had a great one last week, and the presentation was awesome. I don't know if I can keep up with Doug there, but I'm going to talk a little bit about something I feel is pretty important, basically getting off the tee, you know, with your driver and keeping yourself in good position to score and having, you know, a good second shot to make those greens a regulation. So I'm talking about visualization and routine for keys to proper driver control, better driver control. And so with visualization, you know, it's one of those things where you get up to the tee, you take a look. You want to take a look down the line, you know, down the fairway. See where you see the shot, and then you want to see what shape you want. You know, do you need to cut it? Do you need to draw it? Do you need to, you know, what you need to do to get to where you want to be? And then you really just want to think of the placement. Where do you want this ball to land? You know, so you want to see all of those things before you even get into your, you know, pre-shot routine, so to speak. That should be probably the first thing you do, is look down the line, see the shot, and then think of the placement. And then from there, you get into your routine. With your routine, you want to, you know, once you visualize, you want to take some steps to ensure that you get that ball where you think you want it to be. First, you really need to think about your posture. You want to have a good athletic stance over the ball. You don't want to just walk up to the ball. You don't want to be too tight. You don't want to be too loose. But you really want to have a positive, powerful stance. You want to focus on where your feet are. You want to have your placement probably, you know, shoulder width at the least. You know, when you have a good wide base, to give yourself the most power. Slight bend in your knees with your butt out a little bit. And then you want to let your arms hang down to reduce tension. You really don't want to be tight with your arms or locking in your elbows. And from there, you go to your focus. You want to allow your wrists. When you take the club back, you want to, like we said, your arms are loose, you take it back. But once you get to the top, now you want to not tighten up as far as tension goes, but, you know, get ready to lock in and have that downswing. So you want to stiffen up your wrist a little bit at the top, make a good solid pass through the ball. And then I think the biggest key to a lot of people think that distance is generated from swinging hard. So a lot of people think that, you know, but really the key to getting the most power and the most control of your ball is really hitting it in the center of the face. So you want to have that club right back to square where you started when you hit that ball. You hit it a little off the sweet spot. It's not going to go where you want it. It's not going to get the distance you want. So you really want to focus on every time seeing those ball marks right in the center of your driver when you hit that driver. And I think that's really the keys to good visualization and good routine to get your ball right down the middle, to give you a good start to that hole.
It's as simple as that.
Just as simple as that. Think of those things. Do them on the range first. But, you know, you see Jason Day close his eyes pretty much on every shot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he really, really takes a lot of time to see what he's looking at or see where he wants that ball to go on his driver. And he pounds the ball. He hits it down the middle most of the time. But you can really tell what he's doing. He's doing a lot of that same type of stuff. So I think it's pretty important that you visualize where you want that ball to go, and then you have the same routine, good, strong, solid routine every time, and focus on getting that ball right in the middle of the club face.
I'm with you on the visualization. I off the tee, I pick a target, yeah, and I just try to only really think about that target, like to an extent that's probably over the top almost. Just thinking. And Ray Floyd used to say he could feel the target in his feet. And so I sometimes try to do that too. As that sounds,
you can feel the base.
Yeah, yep. And I just try to hit through my swing. I try to take a turn, and other than the target, the only thing I think about off the tee is a slow takeaway with a full turn. And other than that, it's all the target. The club's going to the target, and the target's in my mind as the club strikes the ball.
Yeah, it's just you want to give yourself the best, obviously the best position you can to get to the next shot. I mean, you can make pars and birdies scrambling all day, but that's not the ideal way to do it. And the more you're in the fairway, the more fairways you're hitting regulation, the better off you're going to be, and the more chance you're going to have greens in regulation, which lead to birdie putts.
Brian, you've hit your driver great as of late. Longer, straighter than maybe you have in a couple of years. Is that safe to say?
Yes.
What was the change that you made?
So a couple of mechanical changes. I've trying to get my left shoulder turned more to get it under my chin. Did some videos, and I saw that I was very flat. My swing plane was very flat, to where my club was kind of like below my shoulder point.
It's tough to swing with. It's a mostly arm swing at that point.
Yeah, so you end up trapped, and all those things happen, right? So my big miss was always way right. So I've been working on getting my shoulder turned more to get my chin, or my shoulder under my chin, and I'm trying to get the club on the way back to get more vertical on the way back. So almost like when I come up, the club is going upward, vertical. And then when I get my shoulder turn complete, then I try to drop it inside.
So upright, you're more upright then.
Almost straight up in a sense, okay? And I'm probably not even close to that, but I feel more vertical than where I was. And then when I try to get to the top, and when I set it, I'm trying to get it set so that my right elbow gets straight, and my arm is straight up and down, where I can almost take my right elbow and jam it into my ribs. I don't get that far, but I want to get this way rather than this way. Knock the microphone away. Okay. But it showed in the video some flaws, and I've been spending some time trying to do that, and it seems to be going, it's going a lot better, no doubt about it. It's going a lot better.
I can definitely see the difference.
Yeah, and I'm more confident, and hopefully the scores will start to show that.
Yeah, you played nine holes tonight and shot 34. So.
Yeah, probably my best round of the year tonight.
So there we go.
So, but it's coming along. Somebody's going to pay.
Well, it's great. The I agree with that tip wholeheartedly, especially on the visualization part. And I think the routine just helps you follow through on your visualization. If it's a consistent routine, you're not thinking about too many other things because you're so used to that routine that you're just going through the motions, allowing you to focus on the target and the shot that you want to hit.
Keeps you in the moment.
It's a very repetitive sport anyway, so why wouldn't you have a routine?
Right.
So that you have that repetitiveness.
Yep.
Right. Takes the pressure off as well.
Well, good tip. It's back in, ball's back in my court next week. I will have the tip next week, and it will probably be a mental tip.
Zen golf.
So this wasn't the only tournament this week. They also played the Barbasol, which I actually was really frustrated with because it seemed like every time I turned to the Golf Channel, I wanted to see live from the Open at some point, and there was always some Barbasol. Round of the Barbasol, which it's fine. These are big tournaments, and it was a career changer for Aaron Baddeley, who made a 24-foot putt on the fourth hole of playoff with Siwoo Kim to win the Barbasol Championship on Sunday at Grand National, secured a 2-year exemption and a spot at the PGA Championship, and he jumps from 85th to 37th in FedEx standings and 245 to 134 in world rankings. So congratulations to Aaron Baddeley.
Does that get him back in the Masters, the alternate events?
I'm not sure. I would say no because they didn't mention it in this where I got my notes, but... I think it should. A win's a win, but except for that one in Puerto Rico.
Right. we didn't give that one to Tony Finau.
So here's a kid that 10 years ago, give or take, won the Australian Open, I think, as a teenager and amateur.
Yeah.
And then came out of tour full of fanfare and actually got out of the gate pretty good.
Yeah.
Great. I think this was his fourth career win.
Right, but it's been 10 years since he won, probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was in the final group with Tiger at Oakmont at the U.S. Open in 07. But he disappeared quickly. He's been in contention at majors, but it's been a long time.
I watched him for a couple holes at the PGA at Oak Hill in 2013, was it? Mm-hmm. I followed him for a couple holes.
I think he mechanically messed around with that stack and tilt theory for a while.
Yes, he did.
To become a better ball striker, and I think it actually set him back.
You don't hear much about the old stack and tilt anymore. So that was a flash in the pan.
He's a putting machine.
Yeah. He actually missed one on the third playoff hole or the second. He had a chance to win, and he missed the putt. I was pulling for the kid.
Yeah.
Nothing against Siwoo Kim, but I was pulling for Baddeley.
Siwoo.
This week, it's time for the RBC Canadian. It's a national championship. It's the Canadian National Championship at Glen Abbey in Oakville, Ontario, If you want to watch it on TV, it'll be Thursday, Friday, 4 to 7 p.m. on the Golf Channel. Saturday, Sunday, 1 to 2:30 on the Golf Channel. And then 3 to 6 on CBS. So CBS is coming back. Although without David Faraday, he was busy with NBC.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think that's a huge loss for CBS. But worth watching the Canadian Open. You remember last year, Jason Day won it. That's where he kind of took off. And went on to win the PGA, but Dustin Johnson, Jason Day bring a 1-2 punch in the world rankings to Glen Abbey, spearheading a roster that features five of the top 25 players in the world. It's the first time that one of two have entered the Canadian Open since 1997 when Tiger Woods and Greg Norman played at Royal Montreal. Past winners include Jason Day last year, Tim Clark in 2014, Brant Snedeker 2013, Scott Piercy way back in 2012, and who didn't do too well at the Open this week right. after playing so well in the previous majors. Sean O'Hare, 2011 champ. And it's always a side thing. You want a Canadian to win this thing because it hasn't happened in so long. David Hearn took a two-shot lead in last year's final round. He's a Canadian. There's 12 Canadians trying to win this year, including Mike Weir. It's been 62 years since a Canadian has won the National Open. So, fellas, I'm looking for your picks. At the Canadian, we didn't do well with our open picks. I picked Day. You guys picked Johnson.
Oh, no, I picked Sergio.
Oh, that's right. You picked Sergio. So he finished highest at fourth.
Right. I picked Johnson.
Ninth and Day 22nd. Yeah. So all right. Well, we'll let you lead off here for the Canadian.
Make sure we get that in here. I'll go with Tony Finau.
Oh, he had a great open. He had a great open.
Okay, I stole Rhett's pick.
Yeah, you can double up.
I know. He did have a good open.
It seems like he's
very consistent.
Good players do.
Yeah, I agree with that. You sticking with Finau?
Well, you know what? Just for to keep it interesting, I will move off of him because you did go first and you picked him. You had the lowest last week, so we'll let you go there. I'll go with Dustin Johnson. He can't really go wrong there.
Can't go wrong. You're right.
Because I know who you're going to pick, Jim.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Jason Day. He's a defending champ. Last year, this was the tournament. The thing that's got me a little flustered with Day is that, okay, he already won the PGA. I think he wanted to win one of the other three this year. It didn't happen.
Right.
But he'll be back in friendly confines, and I got to stick with Day. If he's in it, I'm picking him. He's still number one in the world.
When do you get off this rule of if he's in it, I'm picking him?
He's getting close to getting – I don't know if he'll be my pick for the PGA yet.
Oh, he's defending champ. You have to pick him next week.
That's why I'm picking him this week. But, you know, if he can't at least be in – contention this week on Sunday, then he won't be my pick of the PGA.
You're moving out
because it's just 1 week away. So
that's right.
They didn't play at Glen Abbey last year, I don't believe.
Yeah, I think you're rotation. Right. I think you're right. They do.
They move it around.
I'm not sure if it's friendly confines for.
Yeah, well, he's friendly with the country.
You're right. The beer.
Other than that, if you're looking for some sleepers this week, Emiliano Grillo's in there. He played pretty good this week at the Open. Bryson DeChambeau returns to the tour, playing at the Canadian. Billy Hurley III won just a few weeks ago at the Congressional. He's in the field. And William McGirt was the darling of the golf world for a while there after winning the Memorial. He's in the field. And Camilo Viegas dropped out of the Olympics because he needs to keep his card.
Right.
So now, he'll be in Canada.
Not to go back to this, but that's the one reason I would, more than any other reason, I would –
right.
Lay off somebody for their reason and not going to the Olympics because they got to play.
So the
Brendan DeYoung did the same thing.
Yeah, and he's playing in Canada too, obviously.
And
so
need to play in tournaments.
Why doesn't the PGA Tour then get with the Olympic Committee and say, hey, we want to award FedEx points? Or is that even possible to do, being the fact? Well, it's not an amateur event. The Olympics is traditionally an amateur event, but let's face it, it's the pro golfers playing in it. So I don't see why you couldn't award FedEx Club points during the Olympic event, too, so that would eliminate one reason for these guys not to contend. Right. As a matter of fact, make it higher than normal because these guys had to qualify.
Yeah, there's fewer. Yep. I like that idea.
So, last person to win the Canadian Open back-to-back was Jim Furyk, who successfully defended his title in 2007. So, PGA Championship just 1 week away. One and a half weeks away, it'll start. Oops, I skipped ahead too far here. There we go. PGA Championship, less than a week and a half. Early picks, quick.
Tony Finau. Good pick. I gotta go DJ. I'm kind of starting to do what you do with Jason Day with DJ.
Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, I'll go with Day. That could change. But, you know, this has been a year of the breakthrough players with Johnson and now Stenson winning majors. Guys that were the best players to have not won a major. So keep an eye out for Ricky Fowler or Sergio, although it's tough to keep an eye out for Ricky. He pumped a couple out of bounds at the Open.
I'd keep an eye out for Sergio. Ricky might be one of those guys that he drops off the table.
Yeah, his better days might be behind him.
I think so.
Wow.
His Players' Championship might be his defining moment.
Wow. Well, yeah, it could be. He's up there at Sergio's charity event right now.
Yeah.
Along with Stenson, actually, and a few other players in Switzerland. I think it's in Switzerland. So, quick note on Henrik Stenson. You may remember last summer on this podcast we reviewed the Garson putting grips. It was a fairly new idea at the time, but they're triangular at the face, so you can have your thumbs on opposing sides of the grip. And Henrik Stenson used the Garson grip. He's been using it now for let's see, what do I got here? He switched to the Garson grip at the Shell Houston Open 2 years ago. Hmm. So he obviously didn't putt great during those entire 2 years, but he sure did putt good. And Garson have said that they've received about 300 new orders in just the first few hours since Stenson's win, and that their distribution in Europe is going nuts, is what they said. Quote, going nuts. So Tony Finau, J.B. Holmes also have won with Garson grips. So you heard it first here about a year ago. Or maybe not first, but you may have heard of it first.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's good for them, though.
And I used a Garson grip to go to the club championship finals last year.
That's their number one marketing campaign that they use.
Yeah, they definitely.
If I would have won, maybe, but
the Seneca Falls was going nuts.
So how about an answer to the trivia question? This was a tough one.
Big dogs.
This is a tough one, but
big names, though.
The last twosome of a Sunday major, the last final pairing of a major featuring two players 40 years or of age or older was in 1954 at the Masters, and it was Ben Hogan and Sam Snead. Can you imagine that? The hoopla around that final pairing.
Imagine them with social media.
But it's it is kind of amazing that it hasn't happened, except for then. You know, it's something I think we'll see happen more often over the next 15, 20 years in the world of golf.
That's
might be 15 or 20 years before it happens.
Yeah.
They're all 20-somethings right now.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, if Mickelson or Stenson are in the final round of a major next year, it would only take another 40-year-old. And it could be the two of them. What happens if at the PGA Championship they're in the final pairing again? Wow. Now, that would be a great story. Yeah. Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we are pushing up here on our hour. Next week we're coming back. We're going to talk about the Canadian Open. But more importantly, we're going to preview the PGA Championship. So it's just a crazy time of year for golf fans.
Okay.
And then what is there, two weeks after that before the Olympics or just one?
I think the opening ceremonies, I believe, are August 5th.
Yeah.
Rings a bell with me.
So it depends. So then golf would probably be that following week.
But the golf is later in the Olympics.
It is, yeah, okay.
The men are first and the women are close it out.
Seems like the 14th is when the golf starts.
So I think it'll be a couple weeks in between. There's a WGC and dropped in there too, isn't there? I forget.
That I don't know.
I'm not sure. There's a couple of tournaments I think before the Olympics.
The John Deere?
John Deere is one of them.
That's one of them.
Definitely, because they moved that for this year for Olympics. Let's see. I gotta figure this out here.
Yeah, we got if you can roll quickly, pull that up. It would be nice information. I could probably pull it up too.
Okay, here we go. All right.
Canadian Open this week. Baltusrol for the PGA Championship the following week.
Travelers. And then the Olympics.
Oh, the Travelers, then the Olympics.
And then the John Deere.
And then the John Deere. And then like one more week, and then it's the playoffs.
So actually, the John Deere is the same week as the Olympics.
Yep.
Okay.
And then the Wyndham, then the Barclays. Deutsche Bank and BMW.
And the Barclays is the cutoff for Ryder Cup points, too.
Yes.
So, and then the Ryder Cup will be coming along in about 11 weeks. So, A lot of stuff going on in the world of golf. We'll be back next week. Brownie, Rhett, thanks for joining me. I'll have the golf tip next week. I'll be celebrating my Jason Day victory, and I will pick Jason Day then to win the PGA Championship the following week. So thanks to everybody for spending some time with us on the GolfJ.com podcast. Connect with us online at Twitter at TheGolfJ, Instagram at The_GolfJ, and we're on Facebook at Facebook.com/GolfJ. All our episodes in the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at golfj.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. to preview the PGA Championship at Baltusrol. Until then, enjoy the Canadian National Championship and hit them long, not often. GolfJ.com.